say. Okay. So I'm not going to start from the beginning, but I'll start from the beginning of the Mishnah again. Okay, well, for the text.
The date.
Okay, you're right. The date tonight is the 28th of May, the year 2003, and we are beginning now the study of Masechet Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah says, "Lifnei Edehin Shalov Dekechavim Shlosha Yomim Oso Losis V'Latzeisimayim." 3 days prior to the major idolatrous festivals, it is prohibited to do any kind of business with them. And the Mishnah gives some examples. Mahashilon v'lishol mehen. In other words, to lend them some object or an animal, whatever it may be that the idolater is asking the Jew for as a favor. Or v'lishol mehen, but by the same token, the Jew is not allowed to go to the idolater and ask also to borrow his things. Why not? Because obviously, under those circumstances, if the man, let's say the idolater, okay, borrows something from the Jew, so he feels that he's doing it in order to help to celebrate the holiday, right? If, on the other hand, the Jew comes to him, so he feels happy in that he feels superior to the Jew, you know, that he could lend him and the Jew doesn't have anything. So shame on the Jew, you understand? So this also then, we can see a parallel in the other statements in the Mishnah over here, dealing with what kind of business is prohibited with them. So, lahaldosam and lulaismehem, it's prohibited to lend them money, because what are they going to do with the money? Obviously, they're going to take the money and they'll spend it on their holiday. They'll buy an animal for a sacrifice, they'll spend it for decorations that they want for the holiday, whatever it may be. And by the same token, again, if you borrow money from them, then in that particular case, again, they will feel that, you know, they are superior to the Jew and make them feel grateful, again, to what? To their Avodah Zarah, to their idol, to their idol, okay? Same thing, the forerun, to pay them, make a payment to them, you know, let's say for a loan, so pay it back, right, for the forerun they had, or to accept a payment back from them. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Nifrayim lehen, if neishim etzul bay. Well, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you should be able to accept payment from them, because the idolater feels sorrow that he's shelling out money at this particular time to the Jew. Let's say he had saved a certain amount of money that he expected to spend on the animal that he wants to sacrifice, or on the decorations, or whatever it is that he wanted to do to celebrate the holiday, and instead he has to pay the Jew back the money that he owes him. So he'll feel bad, says Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore a Jew should be permitted. But the sages disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. They say, Abulo, they said to him, Afal Pisha Netzahu Alshav, even though the Goy, he says, is now feeling sorrow because he doesn't have that money, but Sameach Udachazman, he'll be happy afterwards in that he's paid off his loan and he doesn't have that yochef and kapas, we would say. He no longer has, you know, the problem that he has to pay. So, yes.
The Mishnah wants to cut off all contacts, and the examples are there may be mentioned, just even those normal business transactions you shouldn't do should have absolutely no contact.
Yeah, well, that's right. In other words, the Mishnah is really giving examples of business dealings with them. But we will have later on other things that a Jew is prohibited to sell them, also because it's contributing to the Simcha, or it's contributing actually directly to the adornment of the idol or whatever it may be, which is also prohibited. Okay, so this is what the Mishnah has to say right now. Okay, now okay, Gemara is troubled by the fact that what is aid me, aidehen. It's not the usual word that we use for a holiday. Huh?
Yeah.
Doesn't aid mean a calamity?
Yes, correct. I mean, this is what's going to happen. We'll see in a second that there is one idea, you know. Of course, the Pasuk says, in Hazino Hashemayim, it says, Ki Karov Yom Eidon, because the day of their disaster or calamity, whatever you want to say, will be coming, okay? It will be nigh. That's the English translation would say, okay?
Yeah.
All right. A Jewish holiday is called either Moed, Elam Adei Hashem, which is of course a Mikra Kodesh, right? Or it's called a Chag.
A Chag.
A Chag, right? But, when it comes to Goyish holidays, how do you refer to that? So in the time of the Gemara, they like this word Eid. As we'll see, however, there is another spelling for the word Eid, and this is what the Gemara is going to say in just a moment, okay? I do want to say that in Yiddish, I don't know if you ever heard the word. What we have a chag, right? We have a holiday.
Yeah.
But how do you refer to a goyish holiday? They call it a choga.
A
choga, right? A choga. They say choga. A choga. Zeh choga. Okay.
I never heard that.
Hey, never heard that.
No.
Yeah. Good Yiddish. Okay. And for example, Kratzbach would be considered a choga. So, okay. That is a very good question. The question was asked some time ago. The answer is that beginning with the Rambam and others, they felt that Christians are not idolaters. Why? Because they accept upon themselves the Bible as part of their heritage, and their kavod is to serve God.
And statues,
well, that's the question. Do they worship the statues?
Eastern Church worship statues.
Do they worship the statues or not? This is the question.
They kneel to it, they bow down to it.
Correct, correct. But what is the kavodah that they have? What do they have in mind?
The statue
is
representative.
Yeah, right. Representative of something.
Was that change not caused by the difficulties, particularly in Spain? In the 11th and 12th century, and he finally tried to mediate the difference a little bit and agreed it's not quite as bad as the...
The Trinity
is a big problem for a Jew. A Jew cannot accept an idea.
All the disputations in Spain, based around this. That's what they said. And
by the same token, I have to say that Islam, too, is not considered an idolatry. Okay. Because they certainly believe in one God.
Yeah.
So,
Is that stone?
Pardon me?
That stone
yeah, but I wouldn't say that they worship the stone.
Well,
it's a sacred object.
We use it
in order to celebrate an idea. Exactly, right.
It's a holy.
Right.
Holy object.
Right.
But in effect, the attitude of Sephardic Jews towards, for instance, let's talk about conversion, is entirely different than Ashkenazi Jews.
In what way, often?
Well, Sephardic Jews, conversion wasn't that terrible, or the after effects among Ashkenazi Jews. Father Jews, why'd you convert? You convert. Ashkenazi Jews, it was a major sin, and called for expulsion of the Magnet.
I think that's simplifying it.
The attitude of Ashkenazi Jews, for instance, when it came to forceful conversion, suicide on a mass scale.
Yeah. What Arthur was talking about right now was, for example, during the Crusades.
Yeah, when
they tried to convert
you kill us.
Exactly. So Jews preferred to offer up their lives.
Yeah.
And
Spanish
case, many of the Spanish Jews became converted. And if they felt something, so they lived as marauders. In other words, in secret they kept up.
Conversos,
right, yeah. Nevertheless, we know that at the time, when Jews were expelled from Spain, still something like close to 400,000 Jews preferred to leave Spain and not to undergo conversion. So,
what is the number of conversos that they estimate?
Most of the conversos disappeared completely.
Yeah.
During the auto de fe, they killed them anyway, whether they admitted it or not. Right?
They what?
Auto de fe, is that what it's called?
The auto de fe, yeah.
They were killing them anyway, whether they admitted it
or not. Yeah, but they killed them if they discovered that the Jews were practicing Judaism secretly.
Right,
but only the conversos.
Right.
Those
who lived completely as goyim and did not practice any Yiddishkeit, so they were not burned on the stake. No, they didn't kill any Jews. No.
Again, Doctor, do you have any concept of what the number of conversos?
At this point, I do not know.
It's a big question
about the history of Jews in Spain, and I don't know whether anybody has ever really estimated how many had converted. Yeah.
If you read two or three of the historians on Spanish Jewry, you have two or three different opinions.
Yeah.
You don't know exact numbers.
Yeah. Well, there's a slight difference between mixed marriages and whether Jews at the same time have converted. Right. Yeah, right.
They're just talking about mixed, basically.
Mixed marriages, exactly, right. Which, after all, from our point of view, you know, is also, it's also.
Right.
Okay, so the Gemara now continues to discuss, first of all, what do we mean by the word eight ahead? Because, as we said before, it's an unusual word for a holiday. So, Rav and Shmuel. There's a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel.
As always,
correct. Between Abaye and Rava, between Hillel and Shammai, etc., etc. Correct. They always had different opinions, okay? So, one of them taught as follows. He said, Eidehen, spell the word Eidehen, he said with an aleph, right? The Chatone, Eidehen, with an ayin. Okay? So he says, Man the Tone, Eidehen, with an aleph, lo mishtabesh, he's not wrong. Man the Tone, Eidehen, and the one who teaches, you know, who teaches us that Eidehen should be written with an ayin at the beginning, says also lo mishtabesh, he's not making a mistake, he's not wrong. So, man netoni Eidehen lo mishtabesh, why is the person who teaches Eidehen with an aleph not wrong? Dichsiv, because we have the pasuk, and the pasuk that we quoted a few moments ago, ki karov yom Eidon, that the day of their disaster, their calamity will be coming. Okay? Uman the Tony Eidehen with an ayin. Omish Tabesh, we said he's not wrong either. Dirsir, because he has a pasuk, and this pasuk comes from Yeshayahu, and it's written, Yitnu Eidehen Yitzdoku. Let them present their witnesses and be proved right. So, problem is over here with, as we'll see in a moment.
So the Eidehen there means witnesses, not.
With an ayin it means.
With an ayin it means witnesses,
right.
not holiday.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So what is this about witnesses? I don't understand.
Well,
what's the difference?
Okay, we'll see. Wait one moment and we'll come a little bit. Okay. He says, the idea over here of Eidehen means, in other words, let then bring their witnesses, meaning the goyim, the idolaters, go ahead. So let them prove their case, right? It's talking and see whether they are right. Okay? This is one interpretation, but as we'll see in a moment, this is going to be disputed. Okay? Uman de Tone Eidehen, and the one who teaches that Eidehen is written with an aleph, my Tamalo Tone Eidehen, for what reason didn't he spell it instead with an ayin? So Amalacho. So his reasoning is Tavra Odiv. The disaster, the calamity which is going to happen to the goyim because of their idolatry, this is more powerful, and that's why he prefers to spell it with an aleph. Uman the Tone Edehen, and the one who teaches, you know, Edehen written with an I in my Tama, for what reason? Lo Tone Edehen with an Aleph. So Amalacho, he says, Manko Gorim Lehu Tavra. Tell me, what causes the disaster that will befall, in other words, the punishment that will befall the idolaters? It's Edus Sheheidu Biatzman. It is the testimony that they themselves offered up by themselves. This is why I said before that to understand the pasuk this way, Yitu and Ehem Yitzaka would mean, right, they will present their witnesses and see if they are proved right. Or they will present their witnesses and then we will see who is proved right, and the Rebbeinu Shalom will punish them for what they're doing. Okay? So,
Bill, word Edehen, sentence of the Mishnah.
Yeah.
It's referring to what?
It means the, here in the Mishnah, what it means is actually the holidays. But the question is, why do they call the idolaters holidays aid? Because the connotation is, you know, that they're going to be punished for celebrating. Right, exactly. Okay? So that's why he spelt it with the Aleph and not say Kikarov Yom Edom. Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Right. So this is what he said, in other words. Right.
You consider it a play on words?
Yes, there's no question about it.
With the witnesses,
One version that I saw said that in Eretz Israel they knew what Edehen with an Aleph is. But in Babylonia, they were not used to using that word over there. And so to them, Edehen should be spelled, you know, with a nine.
Right.
But that's a theory. Right, they're both. This is correct.
But
no question about that. That's why I say it's only a theory.
If they knew the word to be spelt with an iron, would they have understood it to mean witnesses or holidays?
No, with an iron, it's witnesses. No question.
In other words, they actually didn't know the other word.
Right. Well, I wouldn't say they didn't know the other word, but the connotation was not the one that was in accordance with their own thinking. Okay? All right. So, he'll call here, Edus Adifa. So, did I skip something over here? The trouble is that the lines look alike. And when I become distracted, we said, to go back again, you know, to the fourth line, it says, you know, what caused disaster, or what will bring about the disaster for the idolaters, Eidu Sheyudu Biatzman, what they themselves are testifying to, right? So, Hilkoch, Eidus Adif, therefore, for this reason, Edus, meaning testimony, witnessing, right, this is more important, okay. So now, the Gemara comes with a different objection to the use of this verse. He says, what do you mean? He says, let's go back to Yeshayahu, okay. Does it say over there, Yitnu Edem Yitzdoku B'yodei Kachavim Ksiv? Is that pasuk written about idolaters? No. Take a look at the text, and then you'll see that it's Chobi Yisrael Ksiv. It's written about the Jewish people. That Yitnu Edehem Nitzdoku means that the Jewish people will give testimony to, the true worship of God, or what they've been doing in order to worship God, and the Nitzdoku, they will be proved just. They will be proved right. You understand? So, if that's the case, then they can't use it for the other one, he says. And so the Omer Reb Shua ben Levi, and this is in accordance with the opinion of Reb Shua ben Levi, who said, "Kol mitzvah sheYisrael osim b'olam hazeh, every mitzvah that the Jew performs in this world, boris me'idos lehem le'mabor, they will come and give witness on their behalf in the world to come." Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yitnu Edehem Yitzdoku, right? they will bring forth their witnesses, meaning all the mitzvahs that you perform, right? The Yitzhak, and they'll be proved righteous. Elu Yisrael. Okay? Now the pasuk continues, Yishmeu Yomru Emes. They will hear and say it is true. So he says, this is Elu Ovdei Kochav. This refers to the idolaters, that when they see that in the world to come, the Jews are proven to be righteousness, proven to be righteous on the basis of all the mitzvahs they prefer that serve as witnesses to this. So they will say then, right? They will hear, they will see the argument, and they will say, "Yomer Emes, this is true. We should have thought about that before."
When they're
okay.
On the NFL.
Right.
It's too late for them to convert then.
Yeah. Elo Amar Afuna, brother of Yeshua. So here comes another opinion. Afuna, the son of Rabbi Yeshua, said, "Man the Yomer Edehen." He says, so in that particular case, I still want to prove that Edehen with an ayin refers to what? Refers to the disaster that will befall the goyim, right? And therefore, it's something else. So he says, Mehocha. He derives it from a different pasuk in Yeshayahu, where it's written, Yotzrei Pesel Kulam Tohu, those who fashion idols, all of them will be proved to be vain, right? Nothing will be proved to be absolute zero. Vachamudehen Bal Yo'ilu, and those things that are dear unto them, namely the idols that are so precious unto them, will be what? Will be tohu, as we said, right? The Yedehem Hamor. And they themselves will be witness to the fact that the idols will not help the idolater. Dorash Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa. Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa gave the following drash. The Itaimon, there are those who say, where's Rabbi Simlai? He said, Le'osid Lovei. Someday in the future, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sefer Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring a Sefer Torah, Manicha B'cheiko, and he's going to place it in his bosom. The Yom Mir, and he'll say, L'mi she'osak bo yavo v'yitel tzchoro, who dealt, who studied, who worked by the Torah, let him come and let him receive his reward. Miad, immediately, eskapsin avoyin ovdei kochavim b'erbuvia. So immediately, the goyim will come in and all mixed up. What it means, all mixed up? It means not nation by nation, but everything, you know, one great big mass where they don't know what's been taught. Okay, that's erbuvia. Yeah, disarray, fine. Okay. Shenemar, as the pasuk says again, Yeshayahu, Kol Hagoyim Nikbatzu Yachdov, all the goyim have gathered together. Okay. So Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So first of all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says unto them, Al Tikonsu Lefonai B'Yerbuvio El Tokanez Kol Umo V'Uba, and says, don't come to me, you know, all mixed up, but rather I want every nation to gather nation by nation. Okay, we're ready for the next slide. Yeah, well, one of these days we'll go over it. Okay, tonight I just want to continue with this. First I got a devil covered by it. This Sofrecha, and also all the wise people, all the sages, you know, the people who... the scholars of the goyim, okay? Shenemar, as it's written, the Yosfu, the Yumim, and let the nations be gathered together, the Ein Le'um Elamalchus, and Le'um means a kingdom. Shenemar, as it is written, Le'um Elam Yemaz, that one nation will be stronger than the other. Of course, this is a reference to Yaakov and Esau in their brother's womb, right? But by extension, it means one nation will be more powerful than the other. Okay, and then the Gemara says, "Meikar buhu kamei kodesh baruch hu." But tell me, can we say that there is, you know, a mixed up group before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu can discern each and every person when it comes to judgment, so it makes no difference to him which way they appear, right? Right. So why does he say each nation should come, you know, in its own, with its own group? Because he doesn't want them to be mixed up, because he wants them to hear what it is, right? And therefore, now what do we find? Alright, so now the nations have gathered nation by nation to talk to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu about Torah, right? Nichtas saw the fun of Malchus, Romi, alright? First of all, which is the nation that appears before Hashem? The answer is the kingdom of Rome.
Yeah.
Tefillah. My Tama, what is the reason that they come in as number one? Why should they get priority? So it says, Meshum Lechashiva, because they are the most important of the nations, you know, the traditional nations.
At that time.
Yeah. Not only that, I mean, because after all, you know, the Roman Empire had conquered so much, right? And of course, Eretz Yisrael was also conquered by the Romans, was a Roman province, okay? Now, I have to say that at this particular point, it is based upon a vision that we have in the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel, he speaks about one animal after another animal appearing, and each one replaces the other one. Okay? So, right. So it doesn't go exactly in the order in which we have it over here, but that animal, which is considered the most powerful and destroyed all the predecessors, this is Rome. Okay? This is what he means. Okay? Alright. So it says, alright. Menalon, how do we know the Hashiva? How do we know that it's the most important of these nations? This is, as it is written, and this is the pasuk from Daniel that he's been quoting. That this nation literally ate up the entire world, right? But and it threshed and stamped upon all the others. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this pasuk refers, he says, Zu Romi, this is Rome. Okay. Zu Romi, and Chayevitz, he says, it's important, Shetivo Yotze Bechol Oidlo, because he says, the reputation of Rome has spread throughout the world. But Menalon, how do we know the man, the Choshev Ayel Bereisha? Now, the next question is, how do we know that the most important should come first? Right? So he says, Kedarav Chisto. He says, this is in accordance with the opinion of Rav Chisto, the Umar Rav Chisto, who said, this we had incidentally in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah too, it says, Melech v'tzibar, when you have the king and you have the mass of the nation, and they have to come and face the Rabbeinu Shalom for judgment, so Melech nichnas techilot udin. So the king is the one who comes in first for judgment. Shenemar, and we have a pasuk, this is based upon the prayer of Shlomo HaMelech, who said, La'asos mishpat avdo, mishpat amo Yisrael. First, that Hashem should judge his servant, meaning the king, right? And then judge his people, Israel. The Tamamai. So the question is still, alright, so why should the king get priority? So he says, Iboy, say more if you wish, La'irach Aron, Mesum, Malcolm, Yavrai. Says, it's not the proper etiquette, it's not proper treatment that a king should sit outside while others, you know, the others are having their case discussed. It's pastish, he says. The Yiboy Seimo, and if you wish, I can give you another reason why the king should come in first. It says, Mekami de Lifush Kalan Af. It's before the Rabbeinu Shalom gets completely angry when he hears all the goyim doing all the bad things that they did, so he's going to take it out on the king. So therefore he comes first. So Omar Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Alright, so now the Rabbeinu Shalom has a question for the nations. He says, Bamai Atzaktem, tell me, what have you been busy doing? Doing your term upon earth. So Omrim Lefonov, they say to him, Rabbeinu Shalom, look what we Romans have done. Habei Shvokim Taknino. Look at all the markets that we have created. Harvey Mechzoris, take a look at all the bathhouses that they have created. Of course, the Roman bathhouse was quite a place, I have to tell you, all right? Harvey Kesev is of here be. Not only that, but we have amassed a multitude of silver and gold. The Chulam Lo Yasinu, and they say, you know, for whom we did all this? Ela Bishri Israel. We've done this all for the sake of the people of Israel, Kadesh Yisasku V'Torah, so that they would have time to learn Torah.
Sure.
A lion to the reverse.
Right. So Amal Amal Kodesh Baruch Hu. So Kodesh Baruch Hu says to them, Ay, Shaitim Shebeilam, you foolish people. Kol Masha Asisem, everything that you've done, Metzarech Atzmechem Asisem, you did it for your own benefit. Tikantem Shvokim? Yeah, okay. So, you created all kinds of markets? Yeah, but you know what you did with your markets? Lahoshi Behen Zoynes. You set up prostitutes in all of these places. This is why you wanted, right? Berchzois? How about the bathhouses? It says, Liyadi Behen Atzvechem. It's in order that you should amuse yourself and entertain yourself over there. Because obviously, the bathhouses were used, you know, not simply in order to get clean, but there's plenty of dirty action going on over there too. Okay.
Is that right?
Of course. No. Kesev Zohov. In America too, well, you have such bath houses also.
San Francisco.
Right. Kesev Zohov. You say that you created so much silver and gold, he says, Shalihu, this belongs to me, says Rabbeinu Shalom. I'm the one who creates money. Says Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, and the Prophet Haggai says, Li HaKesev, the Li HaZohav, the Yerum HaShem's voice. The silver belongs to me, the gold belongs to me, saith the Lord of hosts. In other words, I'm the one who creates it, who dispenses it to you, and so on. All right, Klum Yesh Bachem Magid Zos, tell me, is there any among you who has an answer? Shenemar, and it's based upon the Pasuk again, Yeshayahu, Mi Bachem Yagid Zos, who will give an answer for this? The Yain Zos, not only that, but you know what the word Zos means. Zos means, Ela Torah, means Torah. Shenemar, V'Zos HaTorah. This is the Torah, right? Asher Sam Moshe, right? So Miyad, Yotzu V'Pachi Nefesh. Okay, so immediately the Romans left the Fachi Nefesh, which means, you know, downcast, okay? Didn't have any argument to give to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Yotzes Malchus, alright, so Rome left the room, right? V'nichnasa Malchus Pras. And now comes the Persians, okay? Achareha, after it. My Tama. Why did Persia follow Rome? So the whole Hashiva Basra, because it was the most important country, most important kingdom after. Okay. Well, Manalon, how do we know? This is because again we go back to the dream of Daniel where he says, Baru Cheva Acharei Tadino, and behold there was a second animal afterwards. Daniel the Dove, which looked like a bear, okay? Utani, a bear, right. Utani, Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef learned that Elo Parsiyim, the bears, he says, that represents the kingdom of Persia, Sheoichlin, the Shoysen Kedoiv, that they eat and drink like a bear eats, the Mesurbolin, Boser, and their fat with flesh, Kedov, just like a bear. Umagadlan Sayor Kedov, and also they let the hair grow long like a bear. V'yein lahem menucha kedayv, and also they're continually restless, just like a bear is always moving around, it's always restless. So Amalai HaKadosh Baruch Hu, alright, so now Rabbeinu Shalem says to the Persians, he says, but Maya Saktim, tell me, what have you been doing? So Amalai Lufanov, so they say to him, Rabbeinu Shalem, look, he says, Harbe Gisharim Gisharnu, we built many bridges, Harbe Karachim Kavashtu, look at all the major cities that we conquered, Harbe Milchomos Asinu, and we've also carried on many, many wars, the Chulam Lo Asinu El Bishvil Yisrael, and all of these things that we did is only for the sake of Israel, Kedei Sheyisasku B'Torah, so that the Jews would have time to study Torah. So Amalehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says unto them, Kol Ma'asha Asisem, Tzarech Atzmechem Asisem, whatever you did for your own sake. Tikantem Gishorim, why did you build bridges? Says Litomehem Meches, you wanted to collect tolls.
That's what they had the idea.
Yeah, okay. Trachim, big cities. You know why you conquered big cities? Lasseis Behem Hungaria, in order to force people to do all kinds of forced labor. You know, this attacks where people had to do forced labor for the government, okay? Milchomos, you say that you made wars for the sake of Israel? Ani Osisi, I'm the one who made war. Shenemar, it's written, Hashem ish milchama, right? The Lord is man of war. Kolom yesh b'chem magid zois, do you have anyone there who could give an answer to me? Shenemar, mi b'chem yagid zois, yein zois elotayro, right? It says, we said before, right? Zois refers to Torah. Do you have any answer? Shenemar, zois ha-Torah, she-sel Moshe. So miyad, yotzum ufano b'fachin nefesh. So, now the Persians leave downcast, okay? The Chima Achad and Chosis Malchus Paras, the Malchus Romi. Now, inasmuch as they see, you know, now we're talking about the other nations, right? Look, they see that the kingdom of Persia follows Malchus Romi, right? The Romans, and in any case, it's Aloma Hanya, didn't do them any good, yeah, right? And yeah. Arguing with the Rebbeinu Shalom. Well, Omide, nothing at all, right? So it says, "My Tamo Ayale." So, why did the other nations hang around? Why did they come in? So Amre, so they said, "Well, there's a good reason, because we were not as guilty of the sins as Rome and Persia." In Husasve Beis Hamikdash. No, well, this story refers to Persia. Why did Persia come? In other words, if Persia saw that Rome is getting such a rotten reception, so why did they come when they might have expected? So he says, well, we have something to justify ourselves, he says. He says, Amre, they said, the Persians say, in Husasri Beis HaMikdash, the Romans destroyed the temple, but Vanan Vaninun, we were the ones who built the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Right. All right, so this is how they felt, you know, that maybe they would be able to get a different faith than the Romans, right? Be treated differently. Then it says, V'chein l'chol u'umo, right? And the same is true of all the other nations who came before Hashem for judgment, you know, that they thought that they would get away with it, right? But v'chim yachad, v'chosen l'kamay, d'nei ma'ane v'nei midei. But as much as they saw that all those who had preceded them, it didn't help them in all their arguments. So my tama ayale, so why then did they come and present their arguments? So Savri, they figured as follows. Hanech ishtabalu behubi Yisrael, those nations, namely Persia and Rome, they enslaved the people of Israel. Banan lo shibadu b'Yisrael, but we never enslaved the people of Israel. So question is, Maishna Hani de Khashivay, Maishna Hani de Lo Khashivay Nahu. So why are some nations singled out and others are not singled out as not being as important? So it says Mishum the Hanech Moshe Machusai Adirasa Meshicha. Says because Rome and Persia are going to continue in existence until the time that Mashiach comes. okay? In other words, the other kingdoms, they came to an end along the line. But these two remained powerful kingdoms. Of course, you have to realize that Rome became the representative of Christianity,
right?
And as far as Persia is concerned, well, in those days it was Persia, but it became representative here of Islam. Right. Okay. I think I'm going to stop at this point because the next one is Adotzi Mishifim. The reason I say that is because the next one is really like one unit, and I'd like to treat it as a unit, okay? So, this being the... Alright, tonight is the 11th of June in the year 2003. We continue now from where we left off in our last session in Avodah Zorah, Daf Beis, Omid Beis, roughly about one quarter of the way up from the bottom of the page. All right. To summarize very briefly what we learned on the previous page and what we learned on the top of the page over here, the Mishnah, of course, started by saying, talking about the halacha. Halacha is allowed to do business with people who are idolaters or not. Of course, you are allowed to do it, but 3 days before the major festivals, the Mishnah says that you should not do any business with it. We'll see later on, when we come to it, that in Babylonia they had a different understanding, and they prohibited essentially just the day itself. Okay. The basic reason, of course, being that if the idolater does business with the Jew, then he'll go and he'll use whatever proceeds or profits or whatever it is he gets out of the business, he'll go and he will then use it for in order to give thanks and to adorn his own idol. So that therefore, since we don't want to be involved even indirectly with idolatry, so that therefore this is the reason why the Mishnah prohibited that. In the Gemara, essentially, first of all, the question was, should you spell a day with an iron or with an aleph, if you remember? And each one brings a proof for it, but it leads directly to the main thought, which we had last week, namely that the idolaters, they come to the people of Israel, and they come to the Rebbeinu Shalom, and they have a taina, as we would say. In other words, they have a complaint to make to him. What is it? That, look, everything that we've done for the sake of the Jews. Rome says, we built all kinds of beautiful establishments, we established this, that, and the other thing, and so on. And we did it in order that to give to the Jews leisure time in order to study Torah. So the Rebbeinu Shalom rejected that argument. Okay. Persia came along and said the same thing, along the same vein. I mean, they pointed out the other things that they had contributed to civilization. But, and again, they came and they said, you know, we did it in order to be able to enable the Jews to devote themselves to the study of Torah. And the Rebbeinu Shalom again rejects this particular argument. And then some of the other nations that came in, nation, and in turn did the same thing, but the question was, at the end of last session, why were Rome and Persia singled out, whereas the others are not mentioned necessarily by name? And the answer is because these were the most important representative governments of their time, and as I pointed out in my estimation, it says that they are destined to rule until the time of Mashiach. There is a hint over here at the fact that Rome represents the Christian nations, and Persia, being an Islamic country, is representative of Islam. Okay. Don't have to worry about the history, actually, in order to confirm whether this is so. Obviously, ancient Rome and ancient Persia are no longer in existence, but, you know, there are modern successes, unfortunately.
So we can consider anybody other than the Jew is an idolater in this case.
the ancient world, Christianity had not yet come into existence. It did eventually, of course, right? Islam, of course, is a much later development. But you had other religions as well. The Goyim, they really adhered to idolatry. They observed it. It became like a state religion, a civic religion, in order to do honor, as we'll see, to the emperor, to do honor to the various deities, and so on and so forth. So that these things definitely were so. Of course, today, as I've already pointed out, we consider that the Christians and the Muslims are not idolaters. Okay? Are not idolaters. Because these are offshoots of Judaism, and also they do recognize, you know, to a certain extent, the validity of our Bible. So that being the case, we cannot consider them in the same category, even if, let's say, in Christianity you have some of the trappings of idolatry. I mean, that they like to make statues and things like that. And they pray unto the statues, but they know that when they're praying unto the statues, it's not that the statue is going to help them, but rather, you know, what is represented by the statue that they see over there. All right. Now, as I said, we come to another unit, still part of the fact that the Goyim have a tendency to obey Shalem. What is it? Why didn't you give us the Torah? Okay. So, let's continue from where we are right now. Omer l'fanav. So they say to him, Rabbeinu Shalom, Klum nasata lonu v'lo kibaltuho. Did you ever offer the Torah to us that, we didn't receive the Torah? Umi matzi l'meimar hoki. So how can they come and say this? The Hawk Siv. Don't we have a pasuk which says, Bayomar had Hashem Sinai Bo Zarachmas Sayyir Lama. Says God came from Sinai and his radiance shone from Sayyir to them. Uchsiv, and then we have another pasuk, of course, Hashem Sinai Bo, this comes from the Zayis HaBracha, the very end of Deuteronomy. The next one is actually from the Haftorah that we read on the second day Shavuos. Hello, come at Taman Yovel, and so on. Well, God came from Taman, and he came from Har Paran, and so on and so forth. So the question is, why are these different places mentioned? My boy Seir, my boy Beforan. What do the Beit Hashem want with Seir? And Seir, if you remember, actually belonged to Edom. And what did he want with Paran, which is also another part far, far in the wilderness, the desert? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan said, Melamed, the fact that all these various names are mentioned teaches us Shehechizira HaKadosh Baruch Hu al kol umu v'umu, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam presented it to each and every nation, v'lo kibluho, and they did not received the Torah. They refused it. They did not want to accept it. Ad Shebo Eitzel Yisrael, the Kibluha, until he came to the Jewish people, and the Jewish people accepted the Torah. So, Eder Hochi Amri. So now the Goyim come with another title. They say, look, Klum Kibal Nuha, the Lokiam Nuha. Is it possible, you know, that if you had given to us the Torah, would we not have fulfilled it? The Aldoa Tavrat Hun, and this is the downfall in their own argument. Amai lo kibal tuha. So taka, why goyim didn't you accept the Torah? Elaka chaimim ufonov. But now they have another title to the Beit Hashanah. Let's say Rebbeinu Shalom. Klom kofiso o aleinu har kigigis velo kibal tuha. Look, when the Jews stood at the bottom of Mount Sinai, you threatened the people of Israel. you said to them that if you don't accept the Torah, I'm going to, you know, like smother you or cover you, know, with a mountain, just as with a, an empty pot or something like that. You know, turn the pot over. So why did you ever say that to us? Did you ever tell us? I mean, if you don't accept the Torah, then in that particular case, I'm going to punish you. No, you never did that. So. And this year, I mean, in the pasuk that shows this, you know, the background for that particular statement is by Yisyatzu B'Sachti Sohor, that the people of Israel stood underneath or in the lower part of the mountain, so that the Rabbeinu Shalom threatened them and then they received. Of course, I don't have to tell you that this is one version of why the Jews accepted the Ten Commandments, right? But there are other versions that say, on the contrary, the Jewish people were very happy to accept the Ten Commandments. And what do we say when we daven? Malchuso, Rov Odecha, etc., Bekeil, Stei Moshe, etc. I mean, you know, we accepted it, you know, willingly. So that contradicts that, but of course they're making a point. The Goyim saying, look, you threatened the people of Israel, so they accepted it. So you could have threatened it to us, and we would have accepted it. That's what they're saying. The Yomar Abdimi Bar Chama said, Lamed Shekofal Hem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kigus, yes, I said that already, Al Yisrael, over the people of Israel, the Yomar Lahem, and he said unto them, Yimatem Ekablim Nesatayra, if you receive the Torah, okay, in other words, if you accept the Torah, really is what Mekablim means over here. If you accept the Torah, Mutav, good. The Im Lav, but if not, Shom Tehei Gevuras Chem. This is where you will be buried. So Miyad. Yes. Gigis is a pot. Yeah. Some say a pot, others say that it's a basket. It's obviously it's something which is round, right? So let's say you have either version, okay? That's what the word gigis is. Yeah. So Miyad immediately, okay, you have this complaint to me. Let's take a look at the early history and see. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Rishonos Yashmiunu. Okay, the first things, in other words, early history, will teach us what's the story. So Bnei Shalom says to them, Sheva mitzvahs shekibaltim, heichon kiyamtem. You received seven mitzvahs. This is what we call the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach, right? That were given to the descendants of Noah. So you accepted it. And did you ever keep it? Of course, you know what the seven things are. They include idolatry, they include not to steal, not to murder, not to eat an eved v'lachai, and so on. Certainly, when it comes to idolatry, they're not supposed to be idolaters if they were to follow the Shemitzvahs when they know. But did they actually live up to the teachings of the Shemitzvahs when they know? Right, pardon me? Eved v'lachai, it's another thing, obviously. Right. Yeah, right.
That's right.
Yeah, it didn't, right.
That's the best, that's
right. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. And then he says, how do we know, Taket, the low kimum, that they did not really observe these various things that they had promised to do, even the seven mitzvahs they knew? Ditani Rav Yosef, as Rav Yosef taught, he says, it's a pasuk which says, again, from this past Shabbos Haftarah, by the way, Omad v'yibodid oras, okay? Bnei Shalom stood, and literally he measured the earth, measured the world. Ro'ah v'yater goyim, he saw, and literally he loosened, or he freed the nations. So the question is, my Ro'ah, so what did the Bnei Shalom see? Ro'ah, he saw, Sheva mitzvah, so Zion mitzvah text, but the Sheva mitzvah Shekiblu aleihen Bnei Noach, the seven mitzvahs that the descendants of Noah accepted upon themselves, the Loki Imun, they did not fulfill them. So Gavin Shaloki Imun, when he saw that they weren't fulfilling them, so Omar the Hitiron, in that case, he gave them permission, you know, he loosened them literally from the bounds of observing these things. Hitiron Lehen. So, Gemara asks a very sensible question now. It says, is Gura Yiskar? Look, in that case, you are rewarding them by virtue of the fact that they're not keeping the mitzvah, so you say, okay, you don't have to keep it anymore. You know, I don't have to tell you, the parallel is with the Palestinian Authority today, right? Bush says, you got to crack down on the Manzerim over there, you know, the Hamas and the rest. And we know that they're not cracking down upon them. I mean, day after day now, lately, we read about more Jews who are being murdered in Eretz Israel. So, it's as if, you know, they never even accepted it in the first place. So, and we have a principle which says, in Cain, if the case is that they get rewarded, so Motzinu, we find that what? Chotein Iskor. We find that the sinner is rewarded. The guy sins and he gets a reward for it yet. They kill Jews and they get Eretz Yisrael, right? They want our permits. Yeah.
So
they think. Yeah. So Abba Ma, the so Mar, the son of Rabbeinu, said, but now on the Omed Gimel, okay. Daf Gimel, Omed Aleph, okay. Lomar, so what the interpretation is, Afal P, Shemekhaim, you know, his son, Ein Mekam Lehem Sochar. So he tries to say, what do you mean, you know, we're rewarding them for not keeping mitzvahs? So he has a different interpretation. He says, even though the goyim do fulfill mitzvahs, ein mekabel hem socha, they do not receive a reward for it. Hello? So now the Gemara immediately questions that. What do you mean? A goy who observes doesn't get a reward? Of course they get a reward. The whole Tanya, after all, we have learned, says, Hoya Rabbi Meir, Oymer Rabbi Meir would say, excuse me, Menayin Shafiru, Oyvet Kechovim, the Oysek Batera, how do we know that even if a person is an idolater and he studies Torah, he has the same rank as the high priest. Of course, we're not talking about a high priest, you know, who is a great Talmud Chacham. We're talking about I guess I could use it if the kitchen is open. I doubt if it's open though. They usually lock it. Yeah, they usually lock the kitchen. I simply wanted to say that there were high priests, for example, who were not great Torah scholars. This we know. We know from our history, because there was a time, excuse me, the days of the Hasmoneans, for example, that it became like a political office. In other words, people would buy, you know, they would pay money in order to be able, you know, to become a Kohen Gadol. Of course, they had to be a Kohen to begin with, right? But this was a problem. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Also, we know that, for example, the Mishnah in Yuma, which speaks about the preparations that the Kohen Gadol had to make before Yom Kippur so he would know what the procedure is. Because remember, he is the one who represents the entire people of Israel. He has to follow the precepts that are ordained for that. Okay? So, they would come to him the scholars would come, thank you very much, they would come to the Kohen Gadol and they would say to him, Ishi Kohen Gadol, my lord, Mr. Kohen Gadol, okay, you have to do this and this and this. If you learned it, fine. If you didn't learn it, then this is what you have to do. But the point is that obviously there were times when they had a Kohen Gadol, you know, who had to be told exactly what the procedure was, particularly because there was a difference between the Sadducean interpretation as compared to the Pharisaic tradition. You know, we had our own, and they sometimes interpret things a little bit differently. Okay, so on this basis, we can see then that a goy who studies Torah, and obviously we mean not just study Torah, but who lives a life based on principles of the Torah. I don't say that he has to keep every commandment, because that's a different story. But, you know, if he keeps the basic ethical teachings and so on, you know, that we have in the show, this is what they know of, in that particular case, he also gets his reward. So it's not so, they're saying, that, you know, that they keep and they get no reward whatever for it. Excuse me.
But they have to believe that the 10 laws of Noah came from God.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But they could do so, right. Yeah. I mean, they have to remember too. I mean, they recognized 20 gods, so they certainly could throw in another god, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Is there a big difference between the first temple and the second temple as far as the Kohen Gadolim?
Yes.
Great ones who have it for a long
time. Yeah, I'll tell you. One basic difference is that the Kohen Gadol, in the time of the first temple, they had to be anointed with oil. Mishuach, okay? The Mishuchim, that's what it says, okay? So, in other words, Mishuchim. Means anointed with oil, right? The idea of Mashiach also is in the same root. Mashiach is the same root, okay. Right. They had to be anointed with oil, okay? Even as Aaron HaKohen was anointed by Moshe Rabbeinu, so the Kohen Gadol in future generations had to be the same. However, we have a Gemara which tells us that when King Yoshiyahu saw that the Babylonians were threatening to destroy Yerushalayim, the Beis Hamikdash, and so on, even though he lived prior to the destruction, so he decided to bury the oil and the Aron and other things, and so on. He buried them so that they should not fall into the hands of the Babylonians. Okay, so from that point on, a Kohen Gadol was distinguished by what we call Merube Begodim, which means that he wore the additional garments. If you take a look in Parsha Emor, where they speak about the Kohanim, the ordinary Kohen, what we would call a Kohen Hedyot, okay, he wore four special garments, okay? But the Kohen Gadol, in addition, had four more. So the Kohanim, from that point on, who were Kohanim Gadolim, they were Meruvah Begodim, okay? And, we learned back in the beginning of Megillah, we had a whole series of Ein Bein, Ein Bein, Ein Bein. I don't know if you recall that, right?
So also, it goes on. First right, the Kohen Gadolim lived much longer person than the second person.
Yeah, that could be too.
In other words, they couldn't dig up the place where they found the anointed oil, so they had. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So from that point on, the Kohen Gadol was a Merubah Begodim. Okay? Yeah.
If the archaeologists find it today, can we use it again?
Well, we have to reestablish a base of the Kohen Gadol also. You know? Right, right. Yeah, right. I mean, it's one of the things, correct. That, the breastplate, you know, the the 12 precious stones containing the Urim and Thummim and so on, right? Didn't exist. No, that didn't exist anymore. Correct. Right. All right. So now we see then that a goy who observes the teachings of the Torah also is respected. How do we know that? Getting back to Rabbi Meir's statement, he says, what does the Torah say? Right? Talmud Loimar. Torah teaches us as follows. It says, Asher Yaseh Oisam Ho'odom V'chai Bohem. Okay? It says, you know, that you shall keep my commandments, which a person, Odom, right? Which a human being should observe and live by it. Okay? Kohanim Leviyim Yisraelim Lo Ne'emar. Pasuk doesn't say Kohanim Leviyim and Yisraelim, they're the ones who have to keep my commandments and live by them. That's not right. But Elo, what is written? Ha'odam, right? Man, human being. Olam Arata, from this you learn Sha'afilo Oivet Kechovim the Yosek Batero, even if he is an idolater and he studies Torah, as I said, the study is more than just study, it means also to live in accordance with the principles of the Torah. So Harehu Kikoyin God, then he is like a high priest. So, that being the case, let's get back again to the argument before, namely that they observe and do not receive a reward. El and Omar, but rather we have to understand that the teaching is as follows: She'ein mekablim aleihem skar zochar kimitzuva v'yoseh elo kimi she'ein mitzuva v'yoseh. The reward that they get is not the same as someone who has already been told by the Torah that he has to keep this and he does it, but rather like someone who is not commanded but nevertheless he does it. I mean, in general we would think that if you're not commanded, you know, that and you do it, that this is a great milah. It is a great milah, but it's considered even more of a milah the other way around. Why? Because when you know that you have an obligation to do this and that, sometimes the yetzer hara comes along and tells you, you can do it another time or something like that. Okay? So that being the case, we say that the reward, because you're fighting the yetzer hara, is greater, you know, in the case of mitzuve v'yoseh, in the case of one who is commanded to observe and he does it, as compared to eino mitzuve v'yoseh, someone who is not commanded and yet he keeps. Okay. The Amar Rabbi Chanino, because the Rabbi Chanino was the author of that idea, that God ol ha-mitzuve v'yoseh, yoseh m'sheino mitzuve v'yoseh. Okay? That the greater is the person who is commanded to observe the Torah and doesn't, as compared to the one who is not commanded and yet he doesn't.
Which is greater?
The one who is commanded, mitzuva v'yosa. In other words, the one who has the obligation to do it. In other words, a Jew is commanded by the Torah to do it. Okay?
No, but why is that greater than the one who does?
Well, as I say, apparently the idea being that you have to battle the yetzer hara in order to get around. Going also have a yetzer hara. But maybe the yetzer hara is not as great as that. Who knows? After all, let's take a case. All right. When a guy goes into McDonald's, right? Does it bother him that he's going in eating tray? Right, okay. But if a Jew goes into McDonald's, say, hey, don't
that's
have
not
to
what
it,
know.
Right.
That's not
so it's a greater temptation not to eat, okay?
But that's not one of the hide rules when you talk to us.
Well, the Eva Melachai, to a certain extent, there's a rule concerning kashrus also. You know, not to tear a limb from an animal and eat it while the animal's still alive. Which apparently Goyim did back in the old days. Yeah, some of them do. Right.
So,
all right.
So did Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know about Henry VIII. Took it from
an animal that is alive. But,
I assume that the animal was already dead when he did that.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Okay. Well, as we learn later on in the Gemara, not now, but. goyim, the idolaters, were guilty of all kinds of atrocities back in the old days. And look, every once in a while we read about cannibalism taking place. What is cannibalism? Terrible. Eat a human being. Chas v'shalom. Right. Okay. So, but this is what the idolaters now pine before the Rebbeinu Shalom. Says Rebbeinu Shalom, Yisrael shekibluha. Okay, so the Jews accepted the Torah, but heichan kiyimuha, show me that they have kept the Torah. Amalahim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Holy One says unto them, Ani be'ibahim, I will give testimony concerning them, Shekiyum es HaTorah, that they have kept the Torah. Kula, the entire Torah, it all depends. You'll see some brackets over there. Omer lefonov, so the goyim again say to the Rebbeinu Shalom, Rebbeinu Shalom, you want to be a witness that the Jews have kept the Torah? Klum yesh av shemeyit al bino, is it permissible for a father to give testimony in the case of his son? That's against the laws of Eidus, right? Ditziv, and the people of Israel called Bitni B'chor Yisrael. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, you know, who, what, when, where? Let Jews out. So, Rebbeinu Shalom said to him, tell him beneath it all, Israel is my firstborn. Well, I'll continue a little bit further and then call it a night, okay? So I'd like to at least finish, you know, an Indian, okay? Right. Okay, so therefore, you, Rabbeinu Shalom, are not qualified to give testimony, right, in the case of your own son, the case of Israel. So, Om Alayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Holy One, blessed be him, be he said unto them, all right, Shomai Lords, Yehidu Bahem. Let heaven and earth give testimony concerning them, Shekiyum and Satorah Kula, that they have kept the entire Torah. Omen the Fadov, so again, the nation saith to him, Bebeda Shalilah. Shomai Lords, no Yimbe Dosan. One of the things that disqualifies a witness is if he is related or he has an interest, you know, connected with the testimony of whom he's testifying. Now, how do we know that heaven and earth have a connection to Torah and Israel? Because we have a pasuk in Yirmiyahu which says, Imlo brisi yom v'layla, if it were not for my covenant with day and night, chukosh my voice is something, if I had not set the laws of heaven and earth that they follow, eternal laws established by Hashem. And Omar Reb Shimon ben Lakish says, "My d'chsiv, what is the meaning?" It says, "By hiyere, by hivoker." Yom Hashishi Rem. It says, "Yom v'layla." So why does the pasuk say it was evening and it was morning, the sixth day? You notice with all the others, right? Yom Echad, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, etc. But here it says Yom Hashishi. Why not six? So he says, well, that's because we learn a special teaching. Shehisa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Masi Bereishis, that the Holy One, blessed be He, made a covenant, made an agreement with creation, the Yomar, and He said, Im Yisrael Mekablen Esterasi, if Israel accepts my Torah, Mutav, good, Yim Vav, but if not, Ani Achazir Eschem Tovno, then I'm going to return you to chaos. Okay? In other words, why does the world exist and run on eternal principles?
For the
sake of the Torah, exactly. Torah and Israel.
Turn it back to what it was before it created.
Right. Okay. Now, I just wanted to point out another teaching. It says over there, Yom HaShishi. It's not over here in the text. But why does it say Yom HaShishi? The answer is, this is a reference to the giving of the Torah when? On the sixth day of the month of
Sivan.
Right. So Yom HaShishi has to deal then with the giving of the Torah, you see. Right.
So then in Bereishis it says HaShishi.
Right.
But we don't learn until way later.
Yeah, well, it refers to, all right, but it's like a hint, you know, that creation was created for the sake of human Torah.
Well,
right.
K means five, and the five books of the Torah.
Okay, very good. Okay.
You mean like the
HaShishi,
the
Hay? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. The Hainidoma Chizkiyo. And here comes another interpretation. It says, "My dechsev." What is the meaning? And this is a verse in the Psalms. Yishamayim hishmato din, from heaven, you have caused judgment to be heard. Eretz yahov shakota, the earth trembled at the fear, and then afterwards it became quiet. Yim yoreoa, if it were afraid, in other words, if it trembled, loma shakota, then why did it quiet down afterwards? The yim shakota, and if they were quiet, then loma yoreoa, then why were they afraid? Ela. But Batchilo, at first, Yoreoa, the earth was afraid of God's judgment, but itself Shakot, but then it quieted it down. So the Bnei Shalom now says again to the Goyim, Mikem Yavo, V'yo'idu Behem Yisrael Shekim Esatorah Kula. Okay, you reject my witnesses, right? You don't want to accept the people of Israel as witnesses. You don't want to accept my testimony even that the Jews have kept the Torah. You don't want to accept heaven and earth as witnesses that the Jews have kept the Torah. All right, bring your own witnesses, and we'll see that even your own people will testify to the fact that the people of Israel have kept the Torah. The Torah Kula. Yovo Nimrod. For example, let Nimrod come, the Yahid be Abraham, and let him give testimony concerning Abraham, Shelo Avad Avid is Kirchhoven. He himself can testify to the fact that Abraham Avinu refused to accept Avodah Zarah, right? Refused to accept idolatry. Of course, according to the Medrash, you know, what did Nimrod do? He threw Abraham into a fiery furnace, if you recall, okay? Okay. Yavo Laban. All right. Let Laban come also to testify. What is he going to testify? It'd be Yaakov. He's going to testify concerning Yaakov, Shelo Nechshad al Hagirsa, that he was not to be suspected of theft. If you remember, Laban chases after Yaakov, right? Because Yaakov wants to go home, you know, and take his women, his wives, and so on and so forth. So, all of a sudden, Laban comes home, and he finds that his trophim, his household idols, are missing. So, immediately, what does he do? When he catches up to Yaakov, he says, you know, why did you steal my things, okay? So, what did Yaakov tell him? He told him, take a look, search everywhere, and see that I didn't touch anything belonging to you. Of course, what we know is that Rachel was the one who did it, but that's besides the point. The point is that Yaakov was not guilty of it.
Why did you take in the first place?
One outstanding reason, according to the Medrash, is the fact that she wanted to wean her father from Avodah Zarah. So that's why she took it.
It's one explanation.
Okay. All right. Continuing.
Okay, right.
Tov Yeshus Potipharah. Let the wife of Potipharah come, Potiphar's wife, okay? The Soyid be Yosef, and let him, let her give testimony concerning Yosef. Shalom Neshalom Avera. Okay? Yosef was tempted, and nevertheless, he never succumbed to the sin of committing adultery. Right? Yavo Nebuchadnezzar, and let Nebuchadnezzar come. The Yoid Bechananya Mishael Vazariah. Let him give testimony concerning Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. This, of course, in the book of Daniel, that they did not bow down to his idol. Yovod or Yovish, let Darius come, the Yoed be Daniel, and let him give testimony concerning Daniel. Shelo b'teil satfila. Daniel never failed to daven. Yavo Bildad Hashuchi, the Sofrana Mosi, Velifas Hatimoni, and in quote in brackets, it says, you Ben Barachel. Of course, it doesn't quite fit, but the others fit. Let them, these were, if you remember, friends of Eov, of Job, and they they came in order to console Job and so on, and to argue with him and say, you know, you must have done something that made you guilty and so on. Okay. Yoidu behem Yisrael. But at any rate, these are prophets of another nation, of other nations. Let them give testimony concerning the people of Israel. Shekiyam is called Torah Kula, that they kept the entire Torah. Shenehmar, as it's written, Tenu Edehem Beitzdoko. Let them present their witnesses, and let the people of Israel be proven right. Okay, I'll stop at this point because I'm sorry. Let me think at this point. Yeah, okay. Okay. Good evening, Saul. How are you? Okay, tonight is the 13th of August, and thank God I'm feeling a lot better. Hopefully, my voice will last through tonight's cheer. And we will be able, minus the coughs, hopefully. And we shall continue from where we left off now at our previous session. Okay. All right. So we see then that Yitzdoku, which, if you recall, was right at the very beginning of the Masechta, where they say, you know, there are those who say that Edehem should be written with an iron, right? And who is it referred to? Okay, so at first it would be to show that the Goyim are Yitzdokah, that they are right. Now it's to prove what? That the Jews are the ones who are right. That they acted in tzedek, they acted correctly, and they did not succumb, you know, to all the temptations of the idol world. And therefore, they themselves are giving testimony concerning Israel. All right, so far so good. But nevertheless, are the Goyim satisfied? They say no. So the Gemara continues and it says, Amud Afonov. So the Goyim now say to the Beinu Shalelem, they say, Beinu Shalelem, Tino Lono Mirosh Vena Asena. All right, let us get a new start. Start all over again, and you'll see that we'll keep the Torah. So Amalehen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rebbeinu Shalelem gives them, as we'll see, there are two answers coming up. Answer number one is as follows. It says, Shaitim Shavoyim. It says, look, you're foolish. Mi Shetorach Be'erov Shabbos, Yerichu B'Shabbos. If a person takes the trouble to prepare Erev Shabbos for his Shabbos meal, then Yerichu B'Shabbos, he has what to eat on Shabbos. But Mi Shalei Torach Be'erov Shabbos, Be'echen Yerichu B'Shabbos. But if you don't take the trouble to prepare your food before Shabbos, how can you eat anything on Shabbos? In other words, you don't have the preparation in, you know, in keeping the mitzvahs of the Torah the way the Jewish people have, because right from Mount Sinai they've been trying the whole thing, right? so that they have a history of keeping the Torah. But nevertheless, what? right. Elo, but afal pichei, nevertheless, it says, mitzvah kala yeshli sukashma. I have a mitzvah which is very easy to observe. That's called a sukkah. Lechu v'asu oisa. So why don't you go and build for yourselves sukkahs? So first of all, an aside. The Gemara wants to say, this says, v'motzis amet hachi. Can you say that the mitzvah of sukkah is really a mitzvah kala, which would imply, you know, it's not a very difficult mitzvah. Those of us, of course, who know, you know, how much work goes into the preparation of a sukkah can appreciate, you know, but nevertheless, why is it called a mitzvah kala? So they give an explanation. It's called mitzvah kala because Omar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, so Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, my disease, sometimes my eyes wander, you know. What is the meaning of the pasuk which says, Asher odichim zavecho hayom, says, yeah, that's okay, thanks very much. Yes. In the Torah it's written, Asher odichim zavecho hayom, you know, we say in the Shema Yisrael, Asher odichim zavecho hayom alavadecha, right? These words, in other words, the commands of God, you know, which I command you this day, right? Because the rest of the pasuk says, shall be in your heart, you shall teach them diligently, etc., 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 put up the sources, and so on and so forth. Okay. But here the stress is upon the word hayom. What do we mean by hayom? It means hayom la'asosom. We also find it in several other places in Devarim, by the way. It's, for example, the end of Parshas Chanan, you have a similar phrase. And there the interpretation, if you look it up in Rashi, you can find it. It says, Hayom la'asosom, today, meaning while we are alive, it is our duty to perform mitzvahs, right? The lo lebocha la'asosom. But tomorrow, meaning, you know, after we pass away and we come to Yom HaMes, there we're not called upon to perform mitzvahs because, you know, we'll be tried, we'll be tested, and so on and so forth. And hayom la'asosom, today you perform the mitzvahs, v'lo hayom nitol sachar, but don't expect to receive the reward for your performance of the mitzvahs today, in other words, in this life. Elo she'ein hakod, but of course, where will we find it? We'll have it in the Yom HaBo. This is the idea. All right. So, nevertheless, the goyim still say, look, give us a chance, right? So, why the Rebbeinu Shalom accede to their wishes? He says, Ela Shein HaKodesh Baruch Hu Bo B'tkuniyo Im B'riyosa. Rebbeinu Shalom is not the act like, Tkuniyo is really like the Latin word tyranny, you know, we have in English, right? He does not act as a tyrant with his creatures. In other words, he wants to show kindness to his creatures, and therefore, the goyim come and say, you want to try the mitzvahs of the Torah? Okay. So, good. So Rebbeinu Shalom is going to give them a chance to try a mitzvah. And by my Kori Lord mitzvah kala. So, next question is, yeah, but why did he refer to it as being a very easy mitzvah to perform? He says, Bishub delesbe chesven kis. The answer is because the observance of the sukkah, in other words, the building of a sukkah, it doesn't require much money on your part. Of course, this is true in a day, you know, where you can pick up spare pieces of lumber and stuff like that and knock it together and so on. And, you know, and then you make yourself a sukkah that way. Today, if you go out and you buy one of these specials, you know, canvas covered, built on a steel or aluminum frame and so on, that already comes a little bit more money. To say nothing of the money that you spend buying kosher food and wine and you know, all the goodies to celebrate the Chag. But nevertheless, okay, it's called here mitzvah kala for that particular reason. Right. All right, so good. So now the goyim do have a mitzvah. That's what Rebbeinu Shlomo says here. Try it out, okay? All right. So miyad, immediately, Each individual, or each the individual nation, right, they go and they make a sukkah upon their roof. Okay. My son David in Eretz Yisrael, he still makes a sukkah on the roof. Well, he's on the top floor. But first he has to clean it out of pigeon dung and stuff like that.
In New York they used to do in the apartment
houses. Yes. Yeah, sometimes they put it out on the fire escape, they would make a sukkah. The only thing is you have to be careful that it's not, you know, there's no overhang covering it which would invalidate the sukkah. Right. But listen, I still remember, you know, the unelaborate sukkahs of the days of my youth. I mean, the Bronx, who knew, making an elaborate sukkah. The first time that I saw an elaborate sukkah was when I came to the Jewish Theological Seminary. And there they had a sukkah that could seat, you know, maybe 100 people or something like that, you know. So that already was a different one. But the most elaborate here in Springfield that I remember, the Gluck sukkah. The Gluck.
Yeah, yeah.
The
Gloves.
Well, he's a caterer.
Right.